Aileen, that piece, Eternal Source of Light Divine by Handel, is not only one of the most sublime pieces he ever penned, but I think actually from anybody's pen. It's just extraordinary. It graced your debut album and gave it its title, Eternal Light. It also told us a great deal about your very particular voice, which kind of embraces the pure and ornate lines of pre-18th century music, really ideally. Now, you were born and bred in the land of song, in Swansea.
Yes.
At what point was it realised that you had a voice worth nurturing?
Well, my parents spotted it quite early on because, I mean, being Welsh, it was the done thing to have singing lessons. Mm. But my parents are in no way pushy, so they just suggested, I think I was about 6 or 7, that I go and see the grand dame that lived locally, Myra Rees. And she taught many, the O'Neills, for example, Dennis O'Neill, she taught the great singers of our area. So I went to sing to her, and she took me on, and we had singing lessons whereby she banged the piano and I sang some songs, and there was a bowl of boiled sweets I remember very clearly on the piano, and I remember thinking even then, if I'm very good, I might get a sweet.
Was that the idea?
I think it was. I never did, hasten to add.
Oops.
So I sang at school, I just sang for fun, and then when I was at comprehensive school, it became obvious that I was taking it a bit more seriously. So I had lessons with John Hugh Thomas, who ran the Swansea Bach Choir and was the absolute maestro and my mentor. And he suggested that I try for Clare College, Cambridge. And it's, to be honest, it was never my voice. It was the joy of singing, for me, certainly. I presume for other people they liked my voice and my renditions. But for me, it was just loving the music. Really enjoyed it at Clare College, sang in the choir there for 3 years. And then I did actually stop singing for a whole year. So.
But you did actually read quite specialised subjects at Clare, didn't you?
Yeah.
It wasn't music you read.
No, in fact, I've never really studied music. I'm not a proper muso in those terms. I studied Anglo-Saxon, Norse and Celtic. And to be honest, by my third year, I'd pretty much ditched the Anglo-Saxon and the Norse and I was specialising on Celtic because Welsh is my first language. It was actually something I could really get my teeth into because I could really relate to these stories. I could really understand the literature. So that's what I thought I was going to be doing. I thought I'd be an academic. I did an MPhil then. I did go off for a while to be an au pair, pretty disastrous au pair. In Paris, and then came back and thought I'll go back to my studies. And it was during my studies that I was asked to audition for Sir John Eliot Gardiner's Monteverdi Choir and go on the Bach Cantata pilgrimage.
Oh gosh, I mean, what a wonderful baptism though to go on that pilgrimage,
yeah.
Because Gardiner and that choir, there's nowhere to hide, is there, in a choir like that?
No, there isn't. I mean, there's 6 sopranos normally in his lineup, and you're singing Bach, learning 2 or 3 new cantatas every week, absolutely from scratch, and we had quite a drill. I think I remember that we would practice on a Wednesday, I think, and then on the Thursday, then fly out on the Friday gig, Friday, Saturday and or Sunday, come back Monday, day of rest Tuesday, and then if you were in the same team for the following week, then you would start again. And it was absolutely non-stop, not forgetting that, of course, in between, John Eliot Gardiner himself was going away and poring over these scores, and we were having to go away and quickly, you know, swat up on the words and the language and get it all together. So it was an incredible project. Professional work as a singer, I just assumed it was all like that. Incredibly intense, such fantastic musical experiences, but also touring experiences. I mean, the places we went, you know, there were small towns in Germany, say, that I don't think had seen a British choir, and we would just land up and sing Bach at them. It was absolutely phenomenal, and that's what kick-started my passion for singing professionally.
Now, your latest album for the Welsh label Sign Wales, which is also Bryn's label, you tell me,
indeed,
is also effectively the soundtrack to a series for S4C TV called Soprano World. Now, this sounded like a great gig to me, you know, swanning around Europe, picking up on all the stories behind some of the world's best-loved soprano numbers. It also showed off your other skill, which is as a presenter, and I'm thinking actually we should swap seats in a minute.
No thanks.
And do it the other way around.
I'm very comfy. No?
Okay, all right. What a gig.
It really was a dream gig. It was a six-part series taking the world's best known soprano arias. So we started, we had Couperin in there. We had Vivaldi, who we also then were dumped. We had Strauss, we had all sorts. We had John Rutter in there. It was a real mix of music. And the joy for me was, as you say, having both hats on, because I presented, but I also performed the pieces that suited me, so the early stuff and the more modern stuff.
I mean, it gave you a chance to dabble in things that you wouldn't normally sing, which I think is interesting.
And that was a really lovely experience. Lovely to do some opera arias in particular. I sang Je veux vivre by Gounod, which is something I've done in concerts, you know, because it's a great, poppy, fun aria, but it's very difficult. And it's lovely to go out there and show that actually I can do something a bit different.
I'm glad you call them songs as well, because, you know, it's so... We forget that's what they are. And it can... People are so pretentious about saying, no, they must be called arias. They are songs.
Do you know, it's something I'm passionate about at the moment. I have a little boy and I'm singing him all sorts at the moment. I mean, he starts singing ABBA the first thing in the morning, then he's on to Bob the Builder. Then he starts on a bit of Handel. I mean, I just think that a tune is a tune, and it's not something I want to oversimplify, because you can't, because within the context of an opera or an oratorio, every aria has its moment and its place. Nevertheless, classical music is in grave danger, I think, of becoming really quite uncool and sticking out, you know, and being left on the sidelines. And if we can just persuade people that it is actually, it's a tune.
That is changing a bit, actually. I think you're, but it's you're right to be passionate about it. But I do think it's classical music is reaching, particularly vocal music, is reaching more and more people. Now, a certain airline made great capital of an otherwise little-known opera by Delibes called Lakmé, and there is that wonderful duet. I can hear it now, actually. Your partner was Charlotte Mobb, your colleague in Harry Christopher's now legendary group, The 16.
Indeed.
How important has it been to you to be part of that group?
Oh, it's been fundamentally important. It's really changed everything about the way I sing, because choral music is about teamwork. It's always about teamwork. It's about pulling together, and it's about making your voice blend with other voices. But the joy and the inspiration, I think, behind Harry's 16 is finding voices which are all wonderful soloistic voices and letting you sing pretty much as a soloist, but being able to then blend it and match it to other singers. And bringing this to the most incredible music. I mean, Renaissance music sung really is angelic, ethereal music. And the passion that Harry puts into it draws out the best in us as singers. So it's something I've absolutely loved doing. So I feel I've been very lucky, I think, really, in getting to know Harry and getting to know all his music and his musical whims.
It's an extraordinary piece, the Allegri Miserere, and you've got those seraphic top Cs now, which I'm sure you have sung at one point. I don't think on this particular recording.
Yes, I'm the second in that one. I'm the one, I believe that's the hardest part. But on the BBC4's Sacred Music series with the 16, I did sing the top Cs. It is just the most incredible piece. It is haunting and it gives you tingles down your spine. I just think it's incredible. Also the mystery behind it, the fact that it wasn't written down for so many years, what centuries.
And the Mozart story as well.
Exactly.
That he actually went in and stole it. Yeah, wrote it down from memory after one hearing, it is said.
Yes.
I don't know whether
that's
true.
Kenzie did.
Thank you.
The 16 has become a kind of magic number, Aileen, marrying this extraordinary intimacy and soloistic quality with collective weight that 16 top voices can bring. It must be an incredible joy singing pieces like Messiah, for example.
So it's very interesting to see the different ways of doing it. I've done it with a Huddersfield Choral Society. That's 100 voices or more. But when you're doing it with a 16, the lovely thing is keeping that Baroque style. You know, it's as if you were doing a Bach motet, say. It still has that very personal, intimate feeling. And I think that's the way I like to hear it. I like the crispness and the clarity.
Well, you've intimated that one of the other characteristics of the 16 is that it aims to nurture the talent within its ranks.
Yes.
And it has its own label, Choro, which showcases that talent, including yours. Now, you've got an album called Ravished with Sacred Ecstasies, which sounds to me like a contradiction in terms.
I think that was deliberate. It's a quote. I hasten to add it as a quote.
But there are some delicious things on it, including a track called Never Weather Beaten Sail. Tell us about the album, because you're working with David Miller.
Yes, and David has worked with the 16 for many, many years, and most of the professional groups, I think, well, across the world, certainly in Britain. He's one of the best lutenists there is, and he's one of the loveliest. And it's really great getting together as a team, because we do all sorts of stuff. We do, this programme is of Dowland, Campion, Purcell, Pelham Humphrey, and we do the obvious pieces like Never Weather Beaten, the Campion song, but we also do the more dramatic pieces like the Blessed Virgin's Expostulation. Now, that's by Purcell. You'd normally expect that to be with full continuo, but doing it with lute is just, it's so much more specific, it's so clear. You know, you can pick out the smaller details. And actually, we recorded it just before I found out I was pregnant and then started performing it on tour when I had my new baby. So it's been a really interesting journey, that one in particular. We also play Schumann and Schubert. I mean, it's lovely to have such a flexible instrumentalist with three different instruments at his disposal for one gig. It's just so enjoyable.
I know you've sung in the Thomaskirche in Leipzig, where Bach played the organ, but tell us about the discovery of a birthday ode by Bach entitled Alles mit Gott, and how you came to be the first soprano to record it.
Yes, that was a real honour, and one of those things that people have to do a double take, I think, when they see it in your bio, that you really did premiere a piece by Bach. But it was discovered in 2005, I think, by Michael Maul, and he found it in a shoebox. I think I'm right in saying, I can't remember which way around it was, I think I'm right in saying that he found the words and then much later he found the music, paired the two together. And it's a very long piece, it's a 12 stanza piece, as a sort of birthday ode. It's quite stanzaic as a result, and I think I only recorded three verses. But yes, I had this phone call from Sir John Eliot Gardner saying, we've discovered some new Bach, will you sing it?
Yeah.
And they sent me the music by recorded post, and I wasn't allowed to show it to anybody. I wasn't even allowed to hum it on the street for fear that somebody could pick it up and run away with it, I suppose. And it was an extraordinary thing, because coming together with these fantastic musicians, all of John Eliot's best, in one room in NAIR Studios, and of course he did the upbeat, and all Bach you do, somebody has sung it or recorded it somewhere, so you have a rough idea. And I remember thinking that upbeat, I've no idea how fast this is, not a clue. Now that is something you don't get often, you know, coming to a whole new piece and setting your stamp on it. It was an honour, like I said, it was fantastic. Alles mit Gott und nichts ohne ihn. Alles mit Gott und nichts ohne ihn. Will dir dein Leben und Segen ziehen. Denn Gott, der Wunder tut, im Himmel und auf Erden, will denen frommen sein.
talked about the specifics of your voice, and it is fascinating that a soprano is not just a soprano, is a soprano. Are you happy living in your voice, or has there ever been a kind of frustrated dramatic soprano?
There's a Wagnerian inside here somewhere.
Yes.
Do you know, I'm very lucky. I'm one of those probably few people who are blessed with a voice that suits the music they love.
Yeah.
I love Baroque music. I love Renaissance music. For me, it's about the dance. It's about the humanity. It's about the emotion. It's just so raw, I think, with Handel, Bach, Purcell. That is what I live for. Also, of course, lighter voices tend to suit modern music. So I also very much enjoy Britten and Poulenc and modern commissions. I mean, I love singing Judith Weir's music, Sir John Tavener, Macmillan in particular. There are so many things I feel I can turn my voice to. There are things that I'm sad about. My husband is a baritone and he's an operatic baritone. So he goes off and he does La Boheme and I think, oh, what I wouldn't give, you know, to sing Mimi. There are certain things I just think are not meant for me and I won't turn my hand to them because I just don't think you should do stuff unless you really suit it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that in the confines of my own home and, you know, in my shower, I don't sing some of the most fantastic tunes there are because I just think, you know, music is glorious, whoever sings it. I hold out hope that I can sing some of the bigger roles.
It's an exciting prospect. Now, how on earth do you balance all the activities in your life, being a mum, singing this extraordinary repertoire and presenting as you do?
I've learnt to say no, and I'm not a girl who says no easily. I
There's
have
a
to
song
think...
cue in there somewhere. Oklahoma,
yes.
I think.
Oklahoma, yeah. Yeah, I'm not so big on that one. That's the key, I think, is just being careful. Picky is the wrong word, because actually I would pick everything if I could. It's just being sensible and looking ahead and balancing it up with, you know, with your voice, knowing what you can cope with, knowing what your head can cope with, because there's a lot of work and you've got to get stuff into your head and then down into your body, make sure you can properly sing it to commit to it. And then, of course, making sure that you've got the headspace for the presenting and all of that with family life. I mean, I think most of the busy sopranos I know, that's exactly what they're doing. We're all juggling. It's ridiculous. There are so many balls in the air.
Now, we couldn't not but end with something Welsh. This has got a twist on it, really, because it's a Welsh folk song, Arranged Haydn.
It is.
And I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the title.
Show me.
So that is the...
This is Dafydd y Garreg Wen. It is a seminal Welsh song. It is absolutely beautiful, and it's David of the White Rock, and he's laying aside his harp because his playing days are over, and he says, look after my widow and my children. But yes, the story is that I presented a programme about Haydn's life, and in so doing, we got to go to Esterhazy and to his fantastic palace and sang there with a trio one of the many Welsh folk songs, in fact, that he arranged. He never arranged them in Welsh, which is very sad, and he never really knew what they were about. He just had a rough idea, but the settings that he made of these folk songs are superb. They're just the best combination of everything in my life, I think. The chamber music, the intimacy, and, of course, the Welsh.
You are